Today's guest is Lorna Green, and Lorna uses a combination of yogic wisdom and science-backed mindset techniques to help burnt-out professionals who can't stop hustling slow down so they can stay on top of their game without sacrificing their health, personal life, and mental well-being. And I had such a great conversation with her. It went a little longer than a lot of our interviews, but we had so much to talk about. And we ended up, it took a while for us to get into her backstory, but I want to tell you to hang in there. If you're feeling like it's going a little long, listen to the end of the episode because it's great. It's great. She talks about late 2006, early 2007, when she went through this health crisis and ended up going through bankruptcy, you know, breaking up with her 16-year relationship. It was like the worst case scenario possible that could happen to somebody, but how she recovered and how it set her on a path that completely changed her life. In fact, I got chills three separate times as she's sharing her story. So I'm sure it's going to affect you in a similar way. But I loved her. I loved her just from the day she sent me her application about being on the podcast, because we have so many similar philosophies about life. So, and we talk about that in the beginning and the things that just really resonated me with me that she said in her application, and that I went to her website and there were just things on it that was like, oh my gosh, I really am going to love getting to know her. So I'm excited because I think this is just the beginning of probably a continued relationship, although she lives in Scotland. So it might be a while before I meet her in person, but I've never been to Scotland. So it is on my list of things that places I want to go. So without further ado, let's get straight to the interview. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. Today, I have with me Lorna Green, and we've just been chatting off, you know, recording, and we're just meeting for the first time, and she's amazing. We are so much alike, and I'm really excited for this interview because one of the things, I have people fill out a questionnaire when they want to come on the podcast. And so she's from Scotland. So I love her accent. So I really have a preference for people who are from the UK and have accents. But she says, I laugh super loud. And sometimes I talk so fast, it's hard to tell if I'm still breathing. And I was like, I can't wait to talk to her because I am so like, I'm like your soul sister. So welcome to the show, Lorna.
Thank you so much. What a lovely introduction. And without even trying, I'm already laughing super loud.
Yeah. So I feel like when we were talking, though, I was able to get a word in edgewise. So I feel like you don't talk too much. So one thing that I had a question about was I found as a talker that sometimes I wasn't a good listener. And so I would love to get your perspective on like, was listening something that you had to develop a skill in? Because I found that, you know, I talked too much. And so I you know, it took me a while to learn to like that is a problem to talk too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think like everything is a skill that we learn, isn't it, in life? And it's an accumulation of our experiences and kind of what we do with those experiences. So I started out my working life in the hairdressing and beauty industry. And for the first certainly sort of 10, 15 years of my life, I was a beauty therapist. So I did massages and facials and painted nails and all that sort of beautiful side of things. And it's a very sociable industry to be in. So
Yes, you
I
can talk a
spent
lot. You have
You
to talk a
get to
lot.
talk a
Yeah.
lot, and people want you to talk a lot. You know, when somebody's getting a beautiful manicure done, they don't want to sit in silence as you do this manicure. So in my sort of early career development, if you will, I learned very quickly not just to talk, because I think there's two ways. Yeah, I do talk a lot, but I think there's talking for the sake of talking, and there's talking when you have something to say. And I seem to be one of those people in the world that I've always got something to say, Laurie.
Yes, I ask a lot of questions. So sometimes my talking is just repeated questions. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, it's a way I used my comfort with speech was my way of making other people comfortable. But what I learned and what, in fact, what I was taught very quickly, because I was about 19 when I became a beauty therapist, so I was still like super young and naive and didn't really, you know the ways of the world, if you will. But what I was taught very quickly was, in order to be the most successful in my job, I needed to be the person who could change in a situation. So just because my natural personality is very bubbly and very outgoing, and you can put me in a room of 100 people and I don't know anyone, I will know everyone in the first 20 minutes of being there. That's who I am. But not everybody who steps into my beauty salon is going to be the same. And I had to learn and understand that it's my job, if I want to make people comfortable, to adapt myself to suit them. So there was times when I would be with people and very quickly realize that they don't want me wittering away in their ear as I'm waxing their legs. Actually, they're quite happy just to read their magazine and, you know, try and sip their cup of tea as I do my work. And so that was something that I trained myself to do, to adapt to the other person, because and I'm sure you know this, Laurie, we tend to like what we perceive as like ourselves. You said it right at the beginning. As soon as you read my bio, you know, laugh super loud, blah, 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 you immediately went, oh my goodness, this is my person.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Someone with a very different personality might have read that bio and gone, oh, how am I going to get through this interview?
That's
She's going to be
true.
a nightmare.
Yeah.
And something that I'm very conscious of, and of course now as a yoga teacher as well, is that it's my job, actually, not just, you know, it's not an option, it's my job. If I want to make people comfortable and if I want to be liked and build rapport with people quickly, I have to adapt in order to suit other people and then gradually introduce what is the natural me. And what I tend to find now, you know, certainly over time, is if I have someone who's maybe a little bit quieter, who needs maybe to be listened to, and I give them the space to do that very quickly, they will actually rise up to my level and they'll become the talker and we'll be laughing together and the rapport will build really fast. But ultimately, it comes down to that skill of knowing that just because you are a certain way, you don't have to force your personality onto other people, but actually read the room and see what it is that someone needs. And if you can gift them that, I think that's a really important thing to be able to do.
Yeah, and I love that as advice. I heard somewhere along the way that, and it's kind of like a psychological tactic, is that you mirror people. Like you
Oh,
could, like
exactly.
when you mirror people and they like scratch their nose, you kind of like do scratch your nose, and you know, and that makes them subconsciously they start to like you because you're mirroring them, and that's really interesting. I have had an experience sitting on an airplane where I just want to read. And the person next to me won't stop talking. And I, you know, it's you send all these signals, like it's clear. Like I'm looking back at my book. I'm like done talking to you. And yeah, it's so funny. I love that you learned that as a young person. And you were clearly, you know, in tune and wanting to have your clients have the best experience. So I love that. Yeah. So One of the things that also struck me about what you wrote is I love it when people take the time to really put their self and their personality into the, instead of just making it like, oh, another copy and paste thing. So,
like a CV, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Lorna became a yoga teacher in 2010.
How do you want to stand out? Yeah. And you stood out a lot. So, but I love that you say you want people to live first and worry less. So tell me how, because we have a lot of worriers, especially with the pandemic, you know. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't consider myself a big worrier, but I had lots of worries this last couple of years. So how do you approach that? How do you get people to worry less?
Yeah. It's a challenge, and especially in our modern world, it seems to just be this ever growing weight that people are carrying.
I worry about kids too. Like, gosh.
Yeah, and how they're developing and the world that they're being brought up in. They're being brought up in a world that's really quite fear driven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's be honest, our actions come from either love or fear. And if everything you're doing is out of fear, the end result just, it doesn't even bear thinking about. And but how do you stop people worrying? Well, the simple answer is, first of all, you don't, because that has to come from them. I can't make anybody do anything. Yes. I can guide, I can suggest, I can nudge, but I can't ultimately make you do anything that you're not ready to do. I have been what I call an internal worrier as long as I can remember. I will find the dark side of any situation. It's like a superpower that I have. It, you know, if you say to me at the end of this interview, Lorna, that was an amazing interview. I loved how you came across. You talked so eloquently. It was a joy to speak to you. Whatever you're going to say, because I know you're going to say that at the end. And my mind will go, yeah, she's just saying that. She's just trying to be nice. She's a really nice woman and she doesn't want to offend me. And, you know, we didn't really get on that well. My mind can turn any beautiful, positive situation into something, you know, that really sucks. And I've done that for most of my life. I've lived what I like to term, yeah, I've lived in disappointment for a long time. And it's a heavy burden to bear. And it was really only when I started down my yoga journey, started to learn some of the wisdom that comes from the teachings of yoga, that I began to understand just what an absolute drain on my energy this worrying thing is. For on so many levels, you know, to worry about things that have happened in the past is just a needless use of your time, because you can't change it. You can't do anything about it. The only thing we can do is learn from it. So what's the point in worrying?
You're stealing from the present moment by worrying about the past.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, similar with the future. You're worrying about something that may or may not happen. Your future is not set in stone. No matter how much you may think it is, every little tiny action that you take on a day-to-day basis is changing your trajectory. So to say, I'm worried about what's going to happen, you know, at whatever time in the future, again, is such a waste of your time and your energy, because you don't know what's going to come. And you know what? Deal with it when it does. So I had lived my own life very much, and I could honestly worry about anything. And if I wasn't worrying about something, I was actually worrying because I wasn't worried. You know, what did I miss? What was I? What should I be worrying about? And
did you have a parent that worried a lot? Like, where did you learn that from? What, you know, to me, that's kind of something that you're not born with. Yeah.
I don't know. I sometimes do think that there's something genetic or hormonal or something that maybe makes you perhaps have a tendency. I'm sure somebody out there could confirm that mm-hmm. there's something that some people just have a tendency to this behavior and where other people don't. I can tell you where it started for me. It started when I was at school, when I was, the memory that I have is when I was in my secondary school. So around about sort of the age of 13, 14. And I would sit exams at that time, and where we live, I live in a lovely little village in Scotland, so we can walk to school, and we used to walk. My mum works in the town, and so after an exam, I would work to where my walk to where my mum worked, excuse me, and she would say to me, "How did the exam go?" And I go, "Oh, mum, oh, it was awful. It was, oh, there's no way I passed it. No way, no way. It was terrible. I couldn't answer anything." And it would just, oh, doom and gloom, right? I have never failed an exam in my life. Not once. But according to me, I failed everything that I've ever done. And what I realized, not at the time, but looking back, as I kind of expanded my own awareness, was this was my mechanism for dealing with disappointment. If I said I'd failed and I failed, all right, well, I was prepared for it. If I said I failed and I didn't fail, okay, that was a pretty good result. So I was never going to allow myself to feel excited or positive or, like I was successful, because what if I wasn't? I just couldn't deal with that. And so that behavior, because let's be honest, our behaviors are all just habits. So that habit actually started for me when I was a kid, and I continued it for a lot of years. So going back to your original question, because I know we have meandered down a very different path, but to go back to the original question, how do I help other people with that? The first step for me is to bring awareness to what you're doing. When you are unaware of what you're doing to yourself, because the outside world isn't doing any of this to you, you're the one that's creating this worry.
That
So
is
when you
for
become aware of
sure.
what you're doing, and you can take that awareness and start to question it, this is where magical things start to happen. When you can pinpoint, I'm feeling this particular way, I'm worried, I'm anxious, I'm making myself crazy over a certain situation, and you can kind of almost step out of yourself, step away from yourself, and say, okay, first of all, is this worry relevant? Is it valid? It's the same. We can do this with fear as well. But is it valid? Because let's be honest, if you're worried about potentially getting sick from coronavirus because you have a heart condition, that's a valid worry. You don't need to let it control your life, but it is a valid worry. If your worry is the person that you met in the street yesterday and said hello to might have been offended by something that you said to them, maybe that's not such a valid concern, right? So it's about getting that awareness and then questioning, questioning, questioning until you can see that that thing really isn't the monster that you first thought it was. And when you can step out of, if I can use the analogy, you step out the shadow of that giant worry into the sunlight of the present moment, suddenly you're like, oh, okay, I actually can live my life. I don't need to carry this thing with me, each and every day. I can take pleasure in this moment that I'm in. Maybe that worry is going to resurface at a later time. That's okay. But right now, I can eat my breakfast and not get heartburn at the end of it because I'm so busy thinking about this thing that, is going to happen later. Does that make sense?
So true. Kind of like be the objective, like
The
try to
observer.
distance yourself from who you are and step out of, like you said, step out of the shadow. But yeah, to kind of like be kind of witness to what that is. And I think too, what if you were giving advice to this person? Like come at it as like, if you can't get out of it, okay, say it's a friend. And that you're the wise friend and you're going to be giving advice. And it's so much easier for us to like help somebody else than to help ourselves, which is so interesting.
So much, so much so. And so once people, kind of learn that technique, and I mean there's so many other things that we can do. And through the practice of yoga for me, that's where I've kind of discovered, how I can get out of my head and, think less and feel more, I guess is the motto there. And when you start to feel more, you kind of put more value on yourself. You stop caring about what other people think. You start doing things for the pleasure of doing them without thinking about so much of the consequences, the what ifs and the maybes and the shoulds and the buts. All of these things stop us from truly living. And so yeah, I want people to experience life much more, because I think, I'm sure you are someone who agrees with this, and I imagine your listeners are probably people who agree with this as well. But I don't think any of us was put on this earth with the sole purpose of sitting at a desk 8 hours a day to have 2 weeks a year where you might be able to just briefly enjoy yourself, to then go back to sitting at a desk and then watching Netflix every day. I don't think any of us were put here for that purpose. We have so much more in us. We have so much more to give, so much more to do. This world is an incredible place if we would just open our eyes and get in the game,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. So true. So true. So speaking of getting in the game, you have a backstory, so I wanted to talk about that. You said that in your mid-30s, and just for the record, you're 48. So
I
you're
am,
at
yeah.
that. I changed my life completely at 47. So I was like, right about your age. But so you did a little earlier than me. You got in the game earlier than me. I'm just a late bloomer.
The
but
timing doesn't
yeah,
matter.
yeah. I finally got there. Maybe it means I'm just gonna live longer because I gotta catch,
Yeah,
gotta catch up and do it all, right?
exactly.
So but you said you experienced illness, bankruptcy, and loss of a 16-year relationship. So talk about a triple whammy. So yeah, the trifecta of transformation. So
It
tell
really
us,
was.
yeah, bring us up to speed on, what was going on.
Okay, so I was about 30, 35 when all of this happened. So I bought my first beauty salon when I was in my early 20s. I think I was about 24 when I bought my first one.
Wow, good for you. You were
Yeah.
very, yeah,
Oh,
you were
I was
very,
driven. I was driven.
yeah.
So I bought my first salon and very quickly opened two more. I lived with my partner that I'd been with since the age of 16 is a builder, and so I actually I built my third one. We built from scratch. We converted an old bank in Glasgow and created this salon and hairdressing, beauty, nails, sunbeds, everything. And so I had these three businesses, and I bought and sold houses with my partner as well, and our life was very, very full on, and I loved our life. I did. I genuinely did. And every year, pretty much since the age of 19, working in spa. Anybody who's listening, any of the spa people out there, you're gonna relate to this completely. You get to December, and 100% you're gonna get a cold because you're just around people all the time. Everybody who works in hairdressing and beauty and all of those sort of, close contact, like we all get sick in December, and you just live with it because that's just part of life. So in, I think it must have been about 2007, end of 2007, I got sick, or no, it was the end of 2006, I beg your pardon, because it took a while to get there. I got sick and it was December, and I just thought, I'm ill, it's the usual thing. But I didn't get better until the middle of 2007. It was like the summer of 2007. So the first couple of months of that year in 2007, I was sleeping about 20 hours a day. My partner would come home and say to me, "Have you eaten today? Have you used the bathroom?" Because I was physically not able to move. I was so exhausted. I was nauseous constantly. And there was some kind of virus had affected me. There,
Sounds like
nobody can.
autoimmune of some sort,
Yeah, I mean, to this day, nobody can put a name to it. But when they tested like my liver function, my kidney function, they were horrific. I mean, like I was apparently, this close to like liver failure, and there was all kinds of stuff going on, internally that I wasn't aware of. And in that sort of first 6 months of the year, I didn't realize just how much my businesses relied on me, because I thought I'd created, I had three businesses, there were about 30 people that worked under me at that time. And I felt very confident that I trained all of these people to run my businesses and to work in my businesses. And you know what? They were amazing people, and they did. They ran my businesses extremely well. But I had made the mistake, something I will never do again as a business owner, of being far too much a part of the businesses. I was still working as a therapist. I was the owner. I was the receptionist some days. I was the accountant. I did the marketing, the recruitment. I did so much and was such an integral part. I worked 3 days a week as a therapist when my other therapist worked five, and I probably took more money than they did because I was just back to back with clients, you know. And looking back on that, I mean, that was a ridiculous way to run a business, but I didn't know it at the time. So middle of
Well, I think
2000.
sometimes too, people, they open businesses, but they love. I remember when I was working in a corporate job and my boss asked if he could promote me to a manager. And it's probably a very similar thing. As I said to him, I said, I like my job. I don't want to be a manager. And he said, but I want you to be the manager. And so it was hard for me to move into a new role when I still liked.
And
And
let
so you, I
go
think
of.
you hang on to those because you that and you like that. And then you probably
Agreed.
have people that, oh, please, can you just do me? You
It's
know,
all
if
the
you're good at
time. I
what you
mean,
do.
I had a waiting list over the sort of 15 years that I was a therapist. I had a waiting list of, like, I think it went up to about 6 months at one point that people were waiting. And so that meant that I had no life, Laurie, in terms of, you know, I couldn't just turn around on a weekend and say, oh, do you know what? It's a beautiful weekend. Let's just go away somewhere. Because I worked every Saturday, and every Saturday I had clients from 9 in the morning till 6 in the evening. Sometimes I would work between two rooms so that I could see. I mean, you know, when I think back on it, it was insanity, but I didn't think of it at the time.
So
So by the
did your business fail because you weren't
Oh,
involved
completely.
anymore?
By that, the middle of 2007, a couple of things happened. So I had been ill and just not really a part of the business at all. And the guys had been, you know, they'd been holding it together, and they'd been doing an amazing job, and they were an amazing team, actually. But I had had the same people with me. So I'd had the first business that I bought was in 2000. So this business was 7 years old by that time. And most of the people who worked with me were people that started with me in 2000, and I trained up. So I had a really loyal team of people. But I lost five key members of my staff pretty much all at once. One got married, somebody emigrated to Australia, one was having a baby, somebody moved on because they were moving house or something, and they just couldn't take the responsibility. And I can't even remember what happened, but it was all valid reason. It wasn't like people were going, I don't want to work here anymore, I don't like it. It was just life happened. But I lost five people who'd been with me for 7 years, who knew how I worked, who knew how the businesses worked, who clients knew, and everything else. And so by the end of 2007, I can tell you now, it was November 2007, I basically sat down one Friday. I took everybody into a room, and I said, our doors are closing. I can't physically keep this business running. I was in so much debt by that point because I used my savings to pay people's wages, because I kept thinking it'll turn around, it'll get better, and it hadn't. And then there was just a whole bunch of stuff that hit me at that point. So I was still not well. After this virus, I was quite depressed. So my mental health really got hit. So I was struggling with my mental health. I lost my businesses because of my mental health. And I should really stress this, the person that I was with at that time, who I to this day I love dearly, never once said to me, you've done this to us, you've made our life harder, you made that mistake. He supported me all the way through it, but I couldn't bear it. All I could see was I had failed. I had let us down. How could he? I hated him because he loved me. The more he loved me, the more I couldn't stand being around him, because I couldn't understand how he could possibly love this. And so I did everything in my power to just push, 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 push until eventually he said, I can't do this anymore. And we split. So that was about 16 years of my life that disappeared. My businesses disappeared. Any money that I'd made, because I had to bankrupt myself, so like there was just nothing. There was no savings. I had the clothes I stood up in. And so I knew I needed to do something, but mentally I wasn't in a great space, and I just didn't know how to pick myself back up. And so I did the one thing that just seemed so utterly insane, but I thought, well, I feel insane at the moment anyway, so I might as well just roll with it. And I applied for a job as a training manager for a group of spas in the Maldives, and I got it. To this day, I don't know how I got it, but I got it. And so I moved to the Maldives about 4 or 5 months after all of this happened. So I was still very raw. I was still really quite broken, but I was in an environment where nobody knew me, nobody knew my history, nobody, I wasn't
It was
Lorna the
probably a good
failure.
thing. It was probably the best thing, just
I
kind of up
think
and moving and
in some ways it was, in other ways, I definitely made it quite a hard route for myself because, I was living on a tiny sandbank in the middle of the Indian Ocean. I was literally like, I was the only white girl in the village, there wasn't a lot of people that I could relate to. I was living on Mali, which is the capital of the Maldives, where it's mostly local people that live there. Most of the expats live on islands, live on resort islands. But because I was responsible for, at that time, I think it was 7 islands, I needed to be based on Mali so that I could go to whatever island I needed to go and work with. So while other people were living on these resort islands where they could drink, they could wear what they wanted, they were around other, sort of Europeans and South Africans and different nationalities. I was living on Mali where it was me in my apartment. Mali is Maldives is a Muslim country, so no alcohol, and you need to obviously cover up when you're moving around. And so it was quite isolating in a lot of ways.
How
But
long were you there?
I lived there for 2 years.
Okay. Is that where you
It
found yoga?
was, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'd found it before that in terms of when I was a teenager, my next door neighbor actually took me to my first yoga class, and I became, I think what most people were in the West at that time. I was like the weekday yogi. I would go to one class a week and at the end of it, wonder why I wasn't experiencing the Zen-like bliss that everyone else seemed to experience. Like, what am I doing wrong? Why am I not getting this, amazing experience of yoga? But when you only go on a Wednesday night to the local church hall, what do you expect? So I'd kind of done yoga on and off for years, really since I was a teenager, and I always enjoyed it as a physical practice, but I never really kind of got into it, dived any deeper into the philosophy and the background and so on. And then when I was sick, I did turn to yoga as a way of managing the pain that I was in and dealing with just the mental difficulties that I was having and so on. But when I went to Maldives, I was exposed to a very different yoga practice because the yoga teacher, so working in spa, just to give you a bit of background, everybody's going to go, oh, your life was so tough, Lorna. So my job was training manager for a group of spas, and essentially the majority of my job involved me going to a spa as a client, having a treatment, and then giving feedback on it. So I basically spent 2 years of my life being massaged.
Oh my gosh, I want that
Hell. And so obviously the resorts had yoga teachers, and again they came under my remit. So I would go and have yoga sessions with these different teachers and feedback and make sure that the standards were good and so on. And so the majority of the yoga teachers were all Indian, Sri Lankan. I think there was one Thai guy there, but they came from. We're not talking, sort of like the white lady in a leotard that I had been used to up to that point. And so their approach to yoga was something I'd never experienced before. The way they spoke about it, even the way they moved was completely different. And so it reignited this interest in it. And so for a couple of years, obviously because I had the opportunity, I was practicing much more. I was around people who were yogis and around people who were interested in wellness and health and all of those things that I was passionate about anyway. And the reason that I became a yoga teacher was actually through one of these guys. His name is Sri. And we had done a session one day. I'd been asked to go and I needed to do some feedback and assessment with him because I hadn't seen him for a while. And we'd done this beautiful yoga session and we'd worked through it. And as we were sitting at the end, he looked at me so intensely and he said, Lorna, Miss Lorna, It's time. Now, when you work in the spa industry and somebody says to you, it's time, you immediately go, oh my God, no, you can't leave. I can't replace you. You're like, whenever somebody says that to you, you think they're leaving. And he went, no, not me, you. And I went, whoa, hold on. Is there something that I don't know? Like, something people are not telling me. Like, have I been sacked? What? I'm not going anywhere. I'm perfectly happy where I am. And he said, no. And he sort of gave me this little sigh and an eye roll as if, oh, child, you need to get with the program here. He said, no. He said, it's time for you to go and teach yoga. And I just laughed, Laurie. And I said, well, no, I mean, I can teach you how to massage. I can teach you how to run a business. There's many things I can teach. Yoga is not one of them. I am not that person. Anyway, I went away thinking, what nonsense. I don't know what he was talking about. But less than 6 months after that conversation, I had given up my lovely job in the Maldives with my apartment and my tax-free earnings and everything else. And I moved to Thailand and I was living on an island again in the middle of the ocean, training as a yoga instructor. And I still, waking up every day going, how did I get here?
Now that just gives me chills. I mean, that's crazy.
It
That's
happened.
crazy.
Well,
Yeah, how? I mean, I'm so
I'll give you
fascinated.
more. Oh, I was gonna say, I can give you more chills than that. Because after doing my yoga teacher training, I spent quite a few months afterwards actively not teaching people yoga, just feeling very uncomfortable with, I couldn't put my finger on why I didn't want to teach yoga, but I just didn't want to do it. People would ask me, oh, you're a yoga teacher, Lorna, can you teach me? And I'd be like, yeah, but let's do some Thai massage first. Or, I would find any excuse under the sun not to do it. And then one night, a group of friends were going for dinner. I was still in Thailand at the time, and we were going for dinner in this restaurant that was kind of like at the top of the mountain. And it was like a, death drop on this path on one side, completely dark at night. And I had the choice of going up with my friends, which is obviously safer, but they were doing a yoga class first and then going for dinner, or going up on my own. Well, I didn't want to go up this horrible path on my own, but I also didn't want to go to the yoga class because it was a yin yoga class. And I was like, well, I'm not dead and I'm not 100. Why do I want to go and do yin? It's like the most boring yoga ever. But I really wanted to go for the dinner. So I went to this yoga class. Now, bearing in mind that I hadn't been teaching yoga, I'd been so resistant to it, I couldn't put my finger on it. I lay in this yoga class. And I swear to you, there was light, there was angels, there was a sort of ah in the background as I sat in this class, when I realized that this is what I'd been waiting for, because yin is the part of me that I'm missing. Yin is the side of me. It's the slow, it's the pause, it's the taking a breath between the words that you say that I didn't even know was possible. And as I sat in that class, I said, yeah, this is what I'm going to teach. And pretty much from that day on, you can shut me up about yoga. So there you go. That's
Isn't that so
your
funny how
skills.
you get led? You got led to this class. You didn't want to go to it. Often I find these things where people are resistant to do that which ends up being kind of the answer and what leads them on the path to where they're meant to
Well,
go.
I think there are clues in your life all the time. And my story, it gets better, Laura. You cannot write this. So after I discovered yin yoga, and I kind of in my mind sort of went, oh yeah, I think this is the path I want to go on. I then needed to go back to working in spa because I was running out of money. I'd been living in Thailand for about a year by this point, and I was a dive instructor, but not a lot of money in that. So I really needed to start earning cash again. And so I'd been offered a pre-opening job just to go and do pre-opening for W and Koh Samui. And that was starting, I think, in the April. And I'd had this, kind of moment in the March, I think it was. And a friend of mine, a couple of days after I had that moment, emailed me to say, oh, if you ever get the chance to train with Victor Chung, he does this yin yoga thing that's getting really big now.
Oh my
You should take
gosh.
advantage. And I went, all right, Victor Chung. A
That's
few
crazy.
days later, I get an email from Absolute Sanctuary on Koh Samui, where I was going to be working, saying, Victor Chung is coming to do a yin yoga training. Oh yeah, it gets better. It gets better.
I
Stay with
mean,
me.
this is like chills. I keep getting
Victor
them.
Chong is coming to do this training. And I went, oh, that's that guy that girl said, amazing. But I can't do it because I have to work. I'm going to do this pre-opening. few days after that, I get an email from the GM of W. Now, I knew him, funnily enough, because I knew him from W in the Maldives. So we'd worked together before. So he emailed me and he said, "Hey, Lauren, you're supposed to be starting doing pre-opening in April. What's the minimum requirement that you need?" And I jokingly said, "Four walls and a floor." And he was like, "So the build's a little bit behind. We might not have those ready for you in April." And I immediately went, "Right." I said, "Well, if I started a month later, would that help you out?" And he said, "Yes." I got on the phone to Absolute Sanctuary, said, "Do you have any places left on this Victor Chung training?" And they said, "Well, funnily enough, somebody just cancelled this morning. We now have one place." I said, "Book me on it." And so Victor became my mentor for Yin for a number of years following that training. So you want chills, lady. Boom, boom, boom. The universe gives you clues. You just have to look out for them. You just have to pay attention. It's all there. It's all there for you. And sometimes it's in the worst possible moments. It's in those times when you feel like everything has broken, everything is lost, everything is at its darkest. That's actually when the magic happens. Because if I didn't lose my business, my relationship probably would still have been going on. My financial situation would have been fine. I would never have thought of moving to the Maldives. I would never have met the people that I met. I would never have trained as a dive instructor, a yoga teacher, traveled the world doing things that I love. This would never have happened to me if I hadn't of just dissolved in that moment in 2007.
And I love the, I went on your website and this also struck me. I loved it, is you said three things. Now I know why. The first one, slow is strong, which is yin, right? Busy isn't cool, which is so accurate. And age is just a number. Those three things are like so me and what I believe in. And so I just think that is. So now we know a little bit of a backstory about that.
That's
It's so
where they come from.
fascinating how, like, an illness. I mean, you just had to go to rock bottom. I mean, to get redirected to where you were meant to go. And I mean, I'm glad that you are where you are, but I'm sad you had to go through all that. But I guess
But you know,
part of the journey.
it's yin and yang, isn't it? I mean, to put it into those, those wonderful terms, I think we all understand the concept of yin and yang. We've all heard of it, at least the idea that everything in nature has an opposite to balance it out. And so, we wouldn't understand what it is to be happy if we never experienced sadness. You wouldn't know what light was if you didn't know what darkness was.
Law
We're
of
not.
polarity. That is a universal
Law of
law.
polarity, exactly. But we're not meant to be on this earth. And think about a heart monitor. Boo, like that's a flat line. That's not a good thing. You're not meant to be on this earth and never have an up or a down. This is what builds you. This is the experiences that you get to talk about on cool podcasts. This is the stories that you get to tell around campfires. You get to tell your grandkids. Back in 2007, this happened to me, and this is how I got through. This is what makes people who they are. And I think we've unfortunately learned at a very young age that there are bad things in our lives and there are good things, when in reality, there are neither. There are just things. And you can choose to see them as bad or good. It depends on your perspective of them, and which way you choose to look at it. Like going back to the conversation we had about those worries. When you worry about something and you when you actually step out and look at it, is this worry, is it, is this in any way benefiting you to have this worry? Is it in any way damaging you to have this worry? That's how we start to look at things. When you start to shift perspective on stuff, instead of labeling everything as good or bad, just looking at it as it's a happening, it exists, it's taken place in my realm of awareness. What am I going to do with this now? Now, that doesn't mean never be sad, never be negative. Oh my God, no, embrace all of those things. Get angry about stuff that makes you angry. Get sad about something. Cry your eyes out if that's what you feel that you need to do. But don't let that dictate who you are and how you move through the
I
world.
had I, you know it's I have to share this because it came up and I think it relates in a really interesting way. So you talked about this like heartbeat and you like it, you know, you that's the excitement, the ups and the downs and the things like that. And I remember, and I don't know if you know my story, but I married my second husband is my college sweetheart. And so, and we, but we had a very fiery relationship in college. We, you know, we fought a lot. A lot of it was, you know, looking back is my desire to control him. And he was very independent and wanted to do his own thing. And he was just somebody you couldn't tie down. And I wanted to settle down. He didn't, wasn't ready to settle down. And anyways, so we broke up and then I met somebody very quickly and I ended up marrying him. And I didn't tell because we'd been broken up, and I felt like if I go and have this conversation with my old boyfriend and say I'm getting married, I was afraid he was going to reel me back in. So it was kind of like I know I'm doing the right thing, I know, and I actually had the thought that I would rather have a flat line than a like this, you know, with a up and down, up and down, up and down, and that was such the wrong decision. You know, because my life, my he brings out the fire in me. He makes life exciting. It's the passion. It's the like everything, you know? And I chose a life that was, you know, I had, don't get me wrong, I had a happy life for a long time where, you know, we had kids, we were raising kids, but it was just the, you know, it was boring.
It was safe,
It was
safe. You
safe. It
chose the
was,
safe life.
yeah, it wasn't the life that lit me up. It wasn't the life that I was supposed to lead. And so, you know, I woke up at some point and it was funny because it was the same time in you, late 2006, and I made that decision. I was like, I'm going to give a call to this person, and he happened to be available. So, but I was like, I want that life. I want a life of passion. I don't want to end my life looking back saying, I chose boring. I chose, you know, safe.
You don't want it on your gravestone, do you? She was safe.
She never pursued that which lit her up. I don't want that to, So anyways, what a great conversation we've had. Yeah, so I love to end it. We could probably do a part two too, because I'm like, oh my
I know.
God,
I'm
it's like,
actually sitting here going, no, that can't be the end. There's so much more we can talk about.
So what does living a not your average life, you are a very great example of not average. And yeah, you even said too that you're from Scotland, but you like to like you live in the
Oh,
world, you
the
know.
world's
It's,
my
I
home.
love that. It's so true. So to what is to your definition, what is not living a not your average life mean to you?
What it means to me now is not letting other people's idea of what my life should be influence how my life actually is. As a 48-year-old woman who is single, living in Scotland, I live with my mum actually just now. God bless her. She took me in the pandemic because I was actually homeless. I had just come back from living in the jungles of Peru
Oh,
when this
wow.
all kicked off, and I didn't actually have anywhere else to go. A 48-year-old woman who lives at home with her mum, who has whose favorite hobbies are pole dancing and flying trapeze. I don't think I'm the idea of what a 48-year-old woman should be. Now, that sentence in itself actually just makes me want to go, argh, because what should a 48-year-old woman do or look like or be? There is no should. But I think we're often far too influenced by how we think we'll be perceived by other people. And if you want to live not an average life, you've got to let go of that. You've got to stop worrying so much about what other people think of you or how you might be seen. If you want to, wear the bright red trousers, it doesn't matter what age you are, you wear those trousers. If you want to start pole dancing, I started pole dancing when I was 40. You go and do it. There's a woman out there, I can't remember, I think she's German or something. She was like 64 and she just won like the pole dancing championships in Europe a few years ago. She had like
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's a
walkies
it's great for strength, for building strength. I
Oh,
know.
but it's
That's
all,
great.
do you know what it's also great for, Laurie? It's great for self-confidence. It's great for building people up. People always think that the pole dance community, sorry, I've gone off on a tangent again. People always think the pole dance community is going to be quite bitchy. It's a lot of, women in tiny, tiny bikinis, all kind of comparing bodies and what have you. You could not be further from the truth. It is one of the most supportive, quite literally uplifting, as well as figuratively uplifting, communities you could be a part of. I've never experienced anything like I did when I was pole dancing. Obviously, I haven't been doing a lot of it in recent years, but when I was pole dancing a lot, in a place down south, actually, I was living in England at the time. I never felt more sexy and loved, and like I loved my body, and not because my body was perfectly formed or anything else, but because other people were just so accepting of it. And I could stand there in my tiny hot pants and my little bra, and maybe my stomach was a little bit wobbly and my thighs were dimply, and you know what? I didn't care. And that's the level that we all need to get to. And there's a beautiful, I can't remember who said the phrase. I feel like it was Eleanor Roosevelt or something like that. And I'm paraphrasing it here, but other people's opinion of you is none of your business. You want to hold that with
So
you every
good.
single day because it says far more about them than it does about you. The only opinion that is ever going to matter in this world is your own. You love you. You love who you are. You love what you're doing and the way you're living your life. Doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
And so what is your tw what's are you looking forward to in your 2022? Are you like as an adventure on the horizon, or is your mom going to be left behind?
No, she's never left behind. I think she'd like to be left behind sometimes, but nope, taking her with me. 2022 is, I think for me, it's a little bit of a year of growth. I've actually, since 2008, when I moved to the Maldives, I've never been still. So for more than 10 years, I've really been homeless, effectively. I've lived and worked wherever I've been in the world, more than 25 countries in the last sort of 12 years. So
That's crazy.
in the last 2 years, I've been the most still and grounded that I've been in a really long time. And although initially I didn't like it at all, I rebelled quite a bit, I was very uncomfortable, but I realized very quickly I actually needed that stability. I needed to be still for a while. And I'm now quite enjoying sort of being in place. Now, that's not to say, oh, don't get me wrong. There is travel on the horizon, but I'm kind of liking being able to nurture something in one place. So my yoga classes, working with people one-to-one, expanding my online businesses is where my energy is going. So 2022 is very much about nurturing that little seed. And then looking at how I can leave that little seed to grow and I can start to spread my wings a little bit more and perhaps add some new adventures to it. But you know what, Laurie, every day is an adventure for me. I go on a walk every day and I'm lucky enough to live in a place where we have what we call in Scotland a loch. You would know it as just a big lake, but we call them lochs. And there's a loch where I live, and so I do a circuit of this loch every day. And
Isn't that where the Loch Ness monster came from, originated from? Was that
there's
the
many lochs
term?
throughout, but yes, in Loch Ness, which is further up north than where I stay, that's where the Loch Ness monster. We don't have a monster. But I walk around this loch every day. I meet different people. The sky is different. The nature is constantly changing. The light is different. Every single day, that's an adventure. The most mundane things can become the most incredible experiences if you choose to view them that way. It comes back to that perspective again. And so my adventures are a little closer to home right now, but they're no less adventurous, I think.
I love that. Yeah, what a great way to end. Every day is an adventure, and make it that. Yeah. Even if you're, you know, just by yourself and, you know, getting in touch with nature. Nature helps that, you know, gives you that feeling. It's amazing. So anyways, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a longer
pleasure.
Episode, but it was, I mean, it was just kept rolling. And then it got into the juicy stuff when we started talking about your transformation and travel and stuff. That was crazy. All right. Thanks so much.
A pleasure. Take care, Lori.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.